back, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Now, we got things lined up again. That was my mistake earlier today. Let me pull up Ola's website here. I think I cut it because you weren't here, Ola. Ola Domegard, everybody. He is, I believe, the winner of the 2016 Prague Peace Award. He can correct me on that. As well as a noted speaker, and his real interests and efforts are in false flags. I don't know where he's joining us from, but joining us now is Ola Domegard. Ola, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you so much.
I got you. Good. You're not feeding back. I moved you over to a different circuit, so I didn't get the feedback because it was really rough with my last guest, Graham Hart, over there in the UK. Ola, where are you at?
I'm living in the south of Spain since the year 2000.
But it's Ola and not Ola.
It's Ole, but right? Yeah, it's a bit like the Spanish Ole, but it's actually a Danish name. But whatever starts with an O and ends with an E.
You're very, very well respected, of course, in the alternative media. So people were joking about that in my chat room today. Saying he's Swedish, but it looks like Ole. Anyways, Ola, welcome. Great to have you. You and I we don't go back, but I know you for a long time used to appear on Red Ice Radio. And every time I would be on Red Ice Radio, I would check the numbers and stats, and there was always Ola Domegard, always there. I would see your name pop up. So it was that's how I actually got to know you, was through the Red Ice efforts that you did. But I've listened to some of your work recently, Ola, and you've been doing some really good work on the false flag side of things, which is, of course, something that's very important for people to understand. But real quick, tell us a little bit, for those who don't know who Ola is, tell us just a little bit about you, because not everybody knows who you are.
Well, I was born in Denmark many, many years ago in a family that was very involved in the Danish resistance movement, in the underground movement during the Second War against the Nazi invasion. And I grew up with a lot of the stories about how, even though you're in the minority of one, or you're really very few against a very superior enemy, that you need to stand up for what is true and right. And then we moved to Sweden when I was a kid, and I grew up there and started working as a journalist. And so it was around early, I think maybe late 70s, that I started waking up to the fact that something very weird was going on in the world. And so I got extremely interested in the JFK assassination, which is, I mean, once you see the headshot in the Zapruder film, very obviously showing that the final headshot count came from the right and to the front somewhere in the grassy knoll area, and not from where the official story says that Lee Harvey Oswald was located. So it was very obvious. It was like a no-brainer that the official story was a lie. So the big question was, why were we being lied to, and why are we being lied to, and by whom? And that took me down a very, very long road for some 30-odd years, where I devoted a major part of my life into exposing the dark forces that are behind so much mayhem in the world. And here we are today.
When
where...
you call these...
Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead. You go ahead and finish your thought.
No, and over the years, one of the things that I started focusing on first and foremost were major assassinations, top assassinations like JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and so on, not having any idea that they were connected in any way or form to start with. But over the years, I found very strong connections in the team that carried out these operations. And also over the last, well, it must be like 8-10 years, I've really come to see how important these false flags operations are, and psyops, in how to control the population, how the few in power can control the masses through these psyops and state-sponsored terror acts against the population, scaring us into obedience so that we will accept their agenda, their very raw and very rough, brutal agenda. And so here we are today, when where there are more false flags than ever. They're just ramping up the speed on a daily basis. So I'm doing everything I can
besides exposing, is there still a delay?
Not now, maybe.
It's okay. You're 1, 2, 3.
Go for it, Dennis.
Okay, great. You're on record here of basically making, and I agree with you, but you're on record of saying, look, this false flag environment is really an industry. It is a cottage industry used not just by governments, but by corporations themselves as part of putting into place this control matrix. Can you expand on how you view this cottage industry called false flags? Because you've highlighted in some of your other interviews, various companies are actually involved in this type of industry.
I would say that just to explain what a false flag is, it's an old naval term, where in the old days, nations like England, Great Britain, or Spain, or Holland, or whatever, was traveling around with their marine forces and just invading, raping, plundering everywhere they came. But sometimes this could cause problems with trade agreements and so on. So somebody came up with the idea, why don't we do it like this instead? We put the enemy's flag on one of our own ships, then let that ship attack us, so that instead of us being the attacker, we are the attacked one, we are the victim, and then that will justify us doing invasion, rape, plunder, whatever it is the plan was to start with. And not even it didn't even only sort of accomplish the target, but many times also the invader was applauded by, oh, it's so great that they managed to defend themselves and won the battle. But it was a total psyop, because there was no enemy. It was only one brutal attack force in one direction. So another template that is very important to understand also is the old Roman template: problem, reaction, solution. The few in power can only be there with the help of fear. It is only through fear that they can control us, the masses. So they need us fearful, they need a boogeyman, and they need an outer enemy, so that we will not look at them and understand what they're up to, but will believe that, oh, it's them over there that are attacking us. So the template goes like this: the few in power secretly create a problem. This problem is nowadays bomb attacks, terror attacks, mass shootings, virus scares, financial crashes, these type of things. And the idea is that this problem should cause a reaction, problem, reaction. The reaction they want is an emotional outcry of absolute panic from us, saying, oh my God, we're under attack, we need protection. And then we will turn towards the few in power, thinking that they're there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who are doing it to us. And then they will then say, well, the only way we can defend you is, and boom, there comes the solution. And the solution every single time is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. So when you combine the two, false flag attacks and problem, reaction, solution, that is the recipe of what is ongoing at the moment in a massive scale. So what I believe...
When we talk about this, just real quick, I want to back up real quick and get your opinion on something on this problem, reaction, solution trinity. One of the pillars of this trinity really revolves around this power elite being able to maintain absolute control over information. And what we see happening, in a way, don't we, Ola, is that this part of their trinity, this pillar, is crumbling below their feet, or below their head, I guess we could say, and it's becoming increasingly more complicated now to pull off these false flags.
I hope so.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I really hope so, because otherwise all of these years that I put into it and many other researchers would have been for nothing. This is also the reason why I've done hundreds and hundreds of interviews trying to show the template they're using, because it's a very simple template that they pull off again and again and again and again, doing the exact same theme. And I believe that not only is it the same power elite behind more or less all the mayhem in the Western world at the moment, that's the way I see it after all of these years at least, but not only is that, but also they're using the same team on a street level carrying these things out. And I would very much suggest that what we're seeing is not a whole world full of Muslim terrorists waking up screaming Allah Akbar and preparing bombs to blow us up, but a small mobile unit that is traveling from NATO country to NATO country in army planes, being transported in discrete army planes from Air Force base, NATO bases, American Air Force bases, and so on, from NATO country to NATO country, because it's only in NATO countries, more or less, that these operations are carried out at the moment. Then they're being, they land on either a military Air Force sort of landing places, whatever you call it, strips, or small discrete airports without flight towers and so on, so they can fly in and out without really having to show their existence, more or less. They come in undercover many times. And then they're being transported in buses to location where a drill, a security drill, is prepared. This drill is always there before these false flag attacks occur, because the drill is there for them to, with the help of people in key positions in the whatever country they're carrying it out, and in whatever location they're carrying it out, they need to control certain individuals, and they have now a very powerful network. So the drill is there. It's it's sort of announced saying, oh, tomorrow we're going to have a security drill or a mass shooting drill or whatever it is for your protection. But the whole idea is for them to be able to close off streets in a certain area, to keep us away, to get vehicles in position, explosives in position, smoke bombs in position, crisis actors, everything, plus being able to rehearse the whole thing, plus being able to do a lot of footage and professional photos, press photos being taken as well during the drill. Then a few days later or the day after or so, boom, that's when the so-called real attack happens. But a lot of the live footage we're being told is live is not live, it's from the drill. And also a lot of the photos that is being spread in international media is not live, it's not taken at the event, it's taken during the drill when they are in total control of everything, including lighting, and they can redo the photos again and again, super sharp and so on. Compared to when you see photos of the Patsy, they always point out it's super blurry, always super duper, so low quality. Also, video footage on when you see that, oh, this has just happened, and you can see somebody, they do like always like a walking tour among the victims where the camera is pointed downwards. You can't see anything. It's super blurry once again. And very often you will see that it's not even real bodies that they are handling. Some of them are so-called cadavers or dummies and so on. I'm sorry about the delay. It gets a little confusing.
Really? Okay. I'm sorry about that also. I don't know why that is. But I've been fighting feedback today for some reason. I don't know, man. Maybe because of you. Maybe they're targeting you. Not that I'm a conspiracy guy. You mentioned two elements to this, and you're mentioning the NATO side of it. You're talking about flying operatives via NATO aircraft, military aircraft, maybe it's unmarked aircraft. This, I believe, is quite credible. The second issue, though, you're talking about crisis actors on the scene. How big of an industry do you suspect that this is then? Because that's what you're describing here as an industry. How big is this industry throughout Europe?
It's growing big time. And it's not only Europe, it's in the state as well. in the States and in Canada and in Australia as well. These companies and these, I think I'm starting to identify the head of the octopus when it comes to the operational part of this, what I call the global tour of terror. And that is a company called crisis-solutions.com. It's a UK-based company, but I believe that they are in a network, international network, where there's an American part of them called Crisis Cast. There's also one part of them that I suspect very much is totally intertwined with this, and it's in Australia. Then you have crisisactors.org. You got many new companies coming forward with where they supply you with everything from amputee actors, you know, people that have lost legs and arms and so in car accidents or so on, that are perfect to be used in these events, because they can, with a bit of makeup, they can look really realistic. They can supply you with, and they tell you on their websites, they can supply you with everything from coordinators, from you know, psychological trainers, from directors, from fireworks, from you know, smoke bombs, to explosives, to everything that is needed. But what we're looking at, I would humbly suggest, is not terror, real terror nowadays. Most of the time what we're looking at are media events, but where the product is terror. It's exactly like if they were shooting a commercial for a headache pill or Coca-Cola, whatever. But in this case, the product that they're selling is terror. They are selling fear, and they're aiming at the black box in front of you. That is the outlet. So they don't care about people on location, what is seen there, or what the few witnesses that are there. They don't care about them at all. They focus on getting this pumped out through media that they control to a major part.
How much are alternative media outlets feeding this cycle of fear by reporting on these stories and then not really taking into account that they may be false? I personally see it too often. I don't report on any of these types of stories because I don't trust them. But do you see the alternative media helping to fuel this cycle of fear being brought about by these false flag operations?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some are aware of it and some are totally unaware of it. But I think it's super important to understand that it is the thing that they try to spread out there is fear. So this is why it's so important not to join that fear. That is also why I come from a point of love, of forgiveness and compassion, and how to transcend this whole situation into the next level. Because if I'm part of spreading fear as well, then I'm just doing them a favor. You know, so this is why I try to break the spell by showing this is how it's pulled off. And it's also like the Wizard of Oz. You know, it sounds like this Wizard of Oz is so powerful and so big and so invincible and so on. But once you pull the curtain and you see what's going on, you will see that it's a small, small, small group of mostly old guys, old men, with no honor, with no dignity, with the only talents they have is they can betray and kill and stab you in the back. And I mean, it's deep, deep shark waters. And there's this power that they say that they have. It's only through us. I mean, these old guys, we say that, oh, but they've got all this super-duper high-tech technology, weaponry and surveillance systems and all of these things. True, but it's not these old guys that are doing it. We are doing it to ourselves. That's the whole thing. It's incredible how we are doing it to ourselves, because these old guys, your dad and father-in-law or whatever, if you give him a laptop and you say, oh my God, I've got a virus, can you please get rid of it, or something like that, they wouldn't be able to install a program even. So these high-tech things, we are the ones doing it. So it's up to us to understand that really, when you identify the people in this, the so-called New World Order, or the elite that they so poetically call themselves, I have words that is not so nice for them, they are actually in the thousands. in the thousands, around 8,000 I've heard, and I think that is quite a possible correct number. And we, the rest of us, are billions. And somebody said that it's really the proportions is like a grain of sand on a beach. That's how many they are. So for us to be so fearful and so down in the mud with our head, you know, down bowing for them and saying, oh my God, oh, I surrender. It's ridiculous. It is absolutely a joke.
But how do you spread that message to people that are getting arrested, you know, for online hate posting and the various agendas being brought against people really in the real life that are affecting real families and real people? How would you translate your message to very real actions being brought about or against people?
Nobody has said this is easy. I tell you, I've had death threats. What I do is, as soon as I can, I try to go on location where these things are carried out. I've predicted, I think, about 8 of them now before they happened on international radio. Often 1 month before they happen, I pointed out the exact location and more or less the time. It is shit scary, but not impossible, because the people that are protecting the few in power, all of the people in uniform, that many of them believing in what they're doing, not understanding that they are totally duped. Many of them are very brutal, and the forces that are trying to push this on us, very, very brutal. I mean, the reason I live in Spain is because 2 of my friends was murdered, and I had a visit as well. So I know the power. I know I felt it, you know, I smelt. And it's very, very scary sometimes. At the same time, that doesn't make it impossible. And it is the real fight is in our head, you know, because they can only control us in fear. And the fear is only inside your head and about the future, you know. So you have
one
to...
Of our commercials, man.
Sorry?
We have a commercial that runs with virtually that exact a message on it. Okay. No, really, I think you're right, though. The fear is within most people's heads, and then there's the real, those at the front lines, we do take hits for people. Your friends have taken some hits. I've taken hits. A lot of us have taken hits. It's not like it's risk-free, but for the masses out there who are only subject to the false flag, there's a metaphysical element to that. And you talked on a recent show about the karma involved and how you use this idea of karma and how things are projected ahead of time and what you are doing then to break these false flags down. Why don't you explain, as our audience likes these types of subjects, explain the karma and why we see so many signs everywhere when it comes to a false flag?
Well, it was about 4 or 5 years ago when I was very confused about what was going on, because I thought I saw things that were so clumsy, and so I couldn't understand how they are so skilled in certain areas, and then they leave, you know, evidence lying around that is just very sloppy. I couldn't get it. I didn't understand what was going on. And then an insider contacted me and said that the way the people in the New World Order, in this hierarchy, the way they understand the law of karma is that if they inform us about what they're going to do and we do not react, then the bad karma is on our shoulders, not theirs. And they are very, very afraid of this bad karma. So they have to show us what they're up to, and often it is hidden in plain sight. So once I was informed about that, I thought, what, that sounds totally weird, and what a twisted way of seeing the law of karma, but let me see if it fits. And from that point on, I started seeing, okay, they are actually putting this type of evidence in the heap of evidence after each attack. They're showing us what the next one is going to, where the next one is going to be. So from that point on, I thought, okay, fair enough, game on. I am going to track you down and expose everything I can, by looking and trying to interpret these clues. And it is almost like in a Dan Brown novel, you know, where each chapter ends with sort of like a clue for the next one. And so this is how I've been able to predict so many of them correctly.
What are some of the symbols you've picked up that might stand out and might be of interest?
No, it's not symbols. It's all kinds of strange things. Like, for instance, when the airport attack in Brussels was on the 1 year before the London Westminster Bridge attack that I predicted 1 month before it happened. At the airport attack, at that point, I was aware of these things. So I was looking everywhere. And in the footage that was released, I mean, there were like hundreds and hundreds of photos from this airport. So I was going through everything, you know, checking every little detail. And like I said, very often hidden right in your face, hidden in plain sight. So there was this photo of a cafe called, I think, the Petite Lille, in the airport, and you could see chairs and tables were turned over and so on, but there wasn't really any damage there because it wasn't where the bombs are said to have gone off. But on the wall behind it were the Eiffel Tower painted horizontal. I mean, a big, big wall painting, but the Eiffel Tower horizontal. I thought, what is that? How weird is that? And it's these type of things. So I went out straight out on international radio, said, here's yet another one. Because by then I've started to see how they put these things out there. So I said, Eiffel Tower, Eiffel Tower, Eiffel Tower. And then just a week after, ISIS came out with a video where they threatened to bomb the Eiffel Tower. And the video was more or less identical with the horizontal Eiffel Tower lying down. And then on the same day as the Nice attack on the 14th of July, the Bastille Day in France, the freedom, the day of liberty, there was also an attack on the Eiffel Tower that most people don't know about. But the whole Eiffel Tower was covered in smoke and flames at the bottom. And they say that it was a truck with fireworks that turned on fire underneath the tower. That was it. But it was all lit up with smoke and flames and all of it. So this is just one example of how they leave these clues. And I can tell you about the recent clues as well, but I think it would be more important for me at the moment to just say what I think is going on at the moment.
Sure. And with that, hold it, because we're going to a break. Ola Damigard, everybody. Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. It's June 24th for the archives. Back with more right after this. Everybody, welcome back. It's Savanch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, our guest, Ola Damigard. He's been awarded the Prague Peace Prize 2016. He's a noted author, international speaker, former journalist, and investigator, spending the last 30 years tracking down various false flag operations. In fact, he's considered one of the experts now on false flags. And Ola, welcome back to Inside the Eye Live.
Thank you so much, Dennis.
So we were talking in the first half hour, Ola, about this operation. It's really a business. As you described it in another podcast, Sergeant Report, I think it was, you mentioned it's like a business. I like the way you described it, and perhaps you can do it again, is how we have this band of roving like rock star groups actually working in various cities. To pull off these false flags.
If I'm correct, and I think my track record is pretty good at this time, not bragging, but just seeing what's going on, I believe that that gives me some weight to what I'm suggesting, because what I'm suggesting is that we are seeing the same mobile unit being transported from country to country, carrying out the exact same theme, meaning that it can even be the exact same people running around in SWAT team uniforms in Paris, as in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in different places in the States, as in Stockholm, and so on and so on. Same crisis actors, same people lying in the street bleeding, same people in police uniforms, same people driving the ambulances and so on. Because the thing is, just because they have a uniform on does not mean that they are real police, ambulance driver, firemen, and so on. And what I call them the global tour of terror. And I tell you, it is more or less the exact same setup as a rock band on tour. They need the exact same thing, you know, like roadies, more or less, but they have like bodyguards or bouncers that they're called, you know, to control the group. It's a small unit because the whole idea for them is to avoid problems with real victims and their families, because this is the thing, it's very, what they call, messy when they terminate someone, as they beautifully, so poetically call it. I mean, when they brutally kill somebody, often they can have major problems, especially with the mothers of their victims. And if these victims are in the hundreds or thousands, then they have a major problem. So somewhere after 9/11, they started regrouping and started appearing with this team. And I think the Boston bombing and Sandy Hook were some of the first ones where we saw this action in motion, where there were no victims, no real victims at all. It was all staged, and where these units consist of directors, film directors, crisis actors, specialists in makeup, explosives, smoke bombs, but also coordinating the whole operation, marketing units that comes up with slogans and logos for the thing, also marketing agencies for product placement. They make extra money by having product placement involved in these so-called terror attacks. And then they're being transported from NATO country to NATO country. It's more or less only NATO countries that are hit with this global tour of terror. And so, and it's the exact same theme. I mean, Allah Akbar, they have an ISIS flag in their back pocket. They forget their passport on location. They get killed. The only blurry images of the guy that they blame on, and he's always more or less either he blows himself up or he's killed on location. The whole thing, the same theme, you know, people are getting killed. It's get very emotional because they always hit women and children to get the emotions going. And then you have the candles and the flowers afterwards. And then the solution that they are being served right after these things happen. And it's every single time you can see that these things that are being presented as the solution have been prepared for a long time. You will see anti-terror budgets that are ready in 2 days, which normally takes like 4 months to get them prepared, but they're like 500 pages. And 2 days after this thing happened, boom, it's they're ready for the next step and so on. But
well, it sounds to me like you're saying there's a lot of coordination then with some NGOs and nonprofits out there within the political realm that are helping and coordinating with these efforts.
No, it's
touched on this issue at all.
These operations are very compartmentalized. It is extremely important that it's very few people, and that these people only know about their little task, their little part of the operation. Mm-hmm. Only very few people are allowed to know the whole big picture. So also the group of crisis actors are kept, for one thing, they have to sign confidentiality agreements, non-disclosure agreements and so on. So if they start spilling the beans, they would be sued from here to the moon. Also, I've been informed by CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum, who's a friend of mine, who was involved in false flags during his career. He says it's very, very easy to control a group like that, because the only thing you do, you pay them well. Money is not a problem at all. They're very well paid. Also, these GoFundMe campaigns that are started often the day before these incidents even happen are bringing in millions, actually, in some cases. So money is one thing that keeps them happy.
How much money is industry and government? How much budget is going into all of this?
In the operation themselves or afterwards?
If we take an operation like Sandy Hook, because a lot of us know that that was BS. Yeah. How much money would have to go into pulling something like that off?
I wouldn't be able to say that because Sandy Hook was quite a big operation. There was very many people involved, many, many crisis actors. Often you will see that the operations are much, much smaller than that. I think we're talking about a unit in maybe 50, 60 people in total. Sandy Hook was much, much bigger than that. It was one of the bigger ones that they pulled up with people from multiple different countries and so on. So I wouldn't be able to say that. I have heard different numbers, but when you see it, it's not the numbers are not so big to pull this whole thing off. It's just like, what would a film shoot like this cost? It's like a 2-day film shoot for Sandy Hook, for instance. So you just count the people involved and see if this had been a war movie or if this had been a film shot at the Opera and you had needed like 500 extras to sit in the background, what would that cost? And it's the same here. It would cost a bit more, but not a lot more. So, but the big money is made afterwards when these false flags are used to generate war on innocent countries where they're bringing in billions of dollars in these attacks, and where the military industrial complex just gets incredible orders and so on, and the anti-terror, all the body scanners, the CCTV footage, all of these anti-terrorist weaponry and Robocop equipment and all of these things, that's where the big money is, not the operation itself. That is sort of, and these operations are often paid by, drug operations and so on. This money is brought in from the back, sort of through the back door and just financing it. But
so when we hear a lot of issues about government saying we need to clamp down on terror, stop funding of terror, we ought to really look at the budgets of these crisis companies and how they're actually getting their funds, shouldn't we?
No, you should say that's a really good idea to your government and say then stop arranging them because they are the ones involved in it. This is the thing. We're talking about the enemy inside. It is your government, my government, and so on that are involved in this, doing it to us. It's state-sponsored terrorism. So this is, I mean, it's a, you need to find out about these things because either we live in a world full of Muslim terrorists that just want to blow us up, option one. Option two, these are staged fake events that are there to freak us out so that we will accept the New World Order, meaning that then the people that step up afterwards to the microphone saying, oh my God, we need to stand united in the face of terror, we will not bend down, these are the people that are doing it to you. The people that are there in part of the investigation of these fake events, the people that are there taking care of the fake victims to these, they are involved, the judges are involved, the lawyers are involved, the key people in media that are reporting these things are involved. So you always need to, they will step forward, the key players, not that they are in any way or form in a position where they're the ones giving the orders, because the orders come from much higher up in the power pyramid, but they are involved.
Yeah. How many Israeli Jewish companies are involved in this? Because we hear a lot about the black budget, ecstasy, Israeli drug money, mainly from the ecstasy drug profits. How many Israeli companies or Jewish companies have you tracked into this network? They're the experts, let's be honest, Ola. When it comes to the media, they operate our media in America. 95% of it's owned by Jewish interests. We even say it's Israeli owned. So obviously, to pull it off, you need the media. So they're involved. How many actual operating companies are from, you think, Israel?
I wouldn't be able to say for sure. I know for 100% sure that the ICTS, the company that is in control of CCTV cameras in most airports and train stations and so on, they are 100% involved. And it's always their cameras that, for some magical reason, get shut down right before the operation and then goes back on right after. And I mean, if you had a product that never worked when they were supposed to work, I mean, they would fire your butt. But here, instead, these people are being used again and again and again. So they are in for sure. And also, when
ICTS is an Israeli security company?
It is the company that are responsible for the CCTV cameras. Okay. When you study terrorism, I would say, I saw a quote by author Nicholas Kollerstrom. He said that to study terrorism without studying Mossad is like watching Hamlet without the prince. And I agree. It's like Mossad were the one that invented invented terrorism, more or less. And they are the masters of deceptions. But at the same time, you make a mistake if you say it's a Mossad operation or it's the CIA or it's the MI6. They work together. The thing is, these agencies look like they're separated on a street level, but the higher up you come in the power pyramid, they're totally in bed with each other, working. And I have this also confirmed by CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum, who used to work with all of them. And he said, it was like just another day at the office. We were all working together. And then depending on where the operation was carried out, we used people from other countries that couldn't be identified so easily in that country that was being attacked. So that's how, if the CIA needed help in the US, well, they brought in Mossad and MI6 and so on, carrying it out, because officially CIA is not allowed to do it in America. They still do, but they're not allowed. And so if it was in England, the MI6 would step back, be in the background, and let the other ones do it on their home turf. Same in France. The French would just step one step back and let the other people carry it out and so on. So I scratch your back, you scratch mine, and that's how it's done.
Obviously, the UK has been hit by a lot of quote-unquote, I don't report on them because I think they're probably, like you say, false flags. But of these UK events, especially the latest one, Finsbury, which is being used now by elites in the UK to clamp down on online, no doubt, online extremism. Have you tracked that down to a false flag at all? Because I haven't really followed that story. Is that a false flag in your opinion? Have you checked into it?
I have, but
Finsbury is where they mowed.
Finsbury is where this van hit the people outside the mosque. Greenfell Tower is the tower fire that you're talking about. And that one, yes, totally arson. I mean, the whole thing is set up. But that one we have to be very careful, because it feels like after keeping the same theme for a long, long time, suddenly with that one, it seems like they changed the modus operandi and are playing us in a different way. So, you know, it's like we really had to be aware of. And I found the clues for that one, but unfortunately I couldn't understand until it was too late. I also found the clues for the ones after Finbury attack, but also one day too late. So the clues are there, and I'm exposing it on my monthly newsletter. My website is lightonconspiracies.com, where I connect all of these things, because they are connected. And Dennis, if I can just say what I believe is going on, I would describe it like this. If you remember, some years ago, there were a series of revolutions in North African countries. They were called the Green Revolutions, and they were organized mostly through Facebook. And it was sort of like the new internet sensation, how social media could be involved in political changes in countries.
I was actually working with, not with, but I interviewed people within the U.S. State Department about their efforts in doing this operation, quite honestly. But yeah, you're correct. You are absolutely correct on that.
Because the thing was, it turned out afterwards that these were not local revolutions. They were there fired up by intelligence agencies and so on, who wanted to get rid of the people in top position in government and replace them with puppets. I mean, same old story, same old. They were called the Green Revolution. So the green, the color code for that one was the green. Then in the Ukraine, there were similar operations there. They went under the color code orange. I would say what we're seeing lately is with the color code pink for some reason. Most of the latest operations are connected with the color code pink. And in North Africa, where they wanted to destabilize these countries, they did it through a revolution. They sparked up these things and got revolutions going. But in Western Europe, we're too well off. You know, people are too okay financially. I mean, nobody's starving and nobody's angry enough to get a revolution going. So what they're trying to do here to destabilize Western Europe or Europe to accept the New World Order agenda into a one world fascist state with a one world army controlling us, they try to, instead of with revolutions, they try to destabilize country by country with these so-called alleged terror attacks. That's the one. And they go around in a circle. It's the same, the same, the same, the same, the same countries, the same targets, and so on. So I'll describe to you what countries it will happen to if they continue how they've been doing so far. In the U.S., it's mass shootings because that's where the weapons are. They want to make the weapons the problem, problem, reaction, solution, so that the solution will be...
We Americans, when they keep doing that, we just kind of smile and say, good luck with that one, guys. That's why we're keeping our weapons, because we do have mass shootings. So that one's not working out so well.
No,
but they keep trying.
Yeah, but excellent that you're aware of it. So, because there's no mass shootings in Europe, because there is no, that's not where the weapons are, so that's not a problem. Anyway, so here, they're trying to, the countries that are hit in a circular motion is UK, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland, Denmark, Sweden, Turkey. Let me see if I forgot anyone. Sometimes they use Spain and Italy, but not very often. But mostly it's these countries again and again and again and again. And the targets they are aiming at are location that has a national value, an emotional value, so that it also involves an interest for tourism and so on. Because what they're trying to get is the emotion. They're out for the emotional reaction. So it would be things that have a national value, like the Twin Towers, the Statue of Liberty, Times Square in the U.S., Big Ben, the Eiffel Tower, Acropolis, Colosseum. Venice. You got now just a few days ago they hit the White Cliffs of Dover, which were very very. Important during the Second World War. They have these referrals to the Second World War all the time. Now, exactly 77 years after when they happened. And so it will either be that some place that gets a lot of emotional attention if it's hit, or it will be center for communications. It will be airports, train stations, or vessels, you know, like trains, planes, ferries, and
Ola Dominguez, his website one last time, Ola, is
quickly lightonconspiracies.com.
All right, and the good thing about 1 hour is we get to invite you back, because you never have enough time. So Ola, thanks for coming in, appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Dennis. Anytime you want me back, I'm here.
All right, everybody, I'm on noon in the badge inside intelligent media.